last 40 seconds we have, explain.
Right. Very quickly, I think Dr. West shows enormous integrity by making a decision to leave Harvard to go to Union, go back to Union in many ways. Why do I say that? Because he could have stayed at Harvard. The chances of him being fired are pretty slim, and he understands that. He was making a larger statement about what tenure is supposed to represent. That is the protection of our intellectual and academic freedom. And there's a relationship between the story you told about Bandy Lee, for example, with Cornel West, that if we can't speak out, if we can't do our work and make controversial stands
3 seconds
and not be protected, then we don't need tenure.
Robin D.G. Kelley, professor of history at UCLA, studies social movements. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. It's time for More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
Good morning. You're listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the Portland metro area in Philomath. It is 104.3 in White Salmon, Washington, Hood River, Oregon, 91.9, and of course, KBOO.FM on the web. Good morning. More Talk Radio in effect, y'all. Well, kind of in effect.
I know.
Well, I didn't hear you chime in, so I was thinking, okay, you know, do we have Monday lag going on?
I didn't know. Not at all. I'm here, and I am Cecil. So, excited to be here with you this morning, and let's make sure. Who are you?
I'm Celeste. Yes, Cecil. Okay. And this is More Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Got to reestablish the parameters. Okay.
So today is Monday. It's the 29th of March, 2021. And what's on the dock this morning, Celeste?
Well, anybody listening to the news, we just got through hearing that one of the greatest minds in the country, perhaps in the world, and a social conscience, cultural critiquer, it has been denied tenure. You know, you hear that. We have the Suez Canal being obstructed, we'll say that, yeah, it stopped up with the Ever Given, which is, to me, kind of a ironic name. Or you have the fact that maybe there's been all this police activity and young people losing their minds on Miami Beach. You know, not to mention the fact that it's been property damage, but just it's a super spreader. Or we could talk about, you know, how Fox Network is being sued, which, as far as some people are concerned, might be good news. I don't know. Derek Chauvin is trial has begun. Or, you know, the fact that we need to do something as a species, you know, to stop those people who are propagating anti-Asian hate. There's all of that and more that we could be talking about. But I'm going to change the pace because I don't know about y'all, but I think today would be one of these ideal days for mending some tears in the tapestry, some worn out spots. We know that over the weekend there was celebration and there was sadness in effect because a beloved children's writer passed at the ripe old age of 104. So Beverly Cleary, who is a Portland star, passed but left a tremendous legacy. And I thought it was interesting that so many people were so deeply touched by her writing. And when Cecil and I were talking about things that we could discuss on the show today, he mentioned, you know, Beverly Cleary and loving the books. And tell us a little bit about your experiences with the books before we launch into our question.
Well, I think it's anyone who fell in love with a book at a young age, we all have our unique story. What I remember when I was very small, you know, after I received my library card and my parents used to take me to the library every Saturday so we could, each week we can select books to read home. And one of the persons I fell in love with as a young reader was Beverly Cleary and her characters. I first fell in love with Henry Huggins, and I read everything, and then I became familiar with, you know, the other peoples, like, you know, Ramona and Beavis and all. And there was something about those characters and Click Click Tat Street that I found exciting. And, you know, when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, who would have known that years later I would live in Portland, in Northeast Portland, right near Click Click Tat Street. So, and the fact that she lived so long, I always was excited. And after I moved to Portland, I used to wanted to get my nephews and nieces excited about her as well. So I used to send them some books from Portland. So that was one character, one author that meant a lot for me in terms of my own development and interest in reading. So every Saturday we went and got books, and among those were a good set from Miss Cleary.
So one of the things I found really interesting was that I don't recall having read the books, and that was interesting for me because I remember a good deal of the books I read, and like Cecil, you know, I was a voracious reader, and I was telling him as a child, my siblings and I would argue over who got to read the breakfast cereal box to the point where my mom would have to take it from us. Because when I say argue, I did mean that. That wasn't hyperbole. But I found it interesting. I hadn't read those books or didn't recall them. But what was really interesting was when Cecil and I got to talking about the fact that he, growing up in New York City, had read these books and found them interesting, compelling, exciting, without the fact that there was a minority character that he could remember. Because that was the first thing I asked. I asked, well, were there any black characters in the book? Were there any other people? And he couldn't remember. Now, that's not to say that there wasn't, because I didn't read them, so I don't know. But what I did know was how interesting it was that these were universal stories, and that they could capture life from a child's point of view and make it every person's story, every child's story. And what was even more interesting, I thought, was the fact that here you have Dr. Seuss's Enterprise, and they pulled some books because they weren't universal, yet Dr. Seuss is also known for being a universal writer. And, you know, when you stop and you kind of compare, well, what makes the difference sometimes? What makes things universal and attractive like that? And what makes these two writers, in one sense, opposite sides of the coin? And I thought it would be interesting to just kind of discuss that universal appeal, you know, and not deal with some of the other heavier, headier, messier elements out of the adult world, like some of them that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and just kind of look at ways that we can see how literature captures us in a way that reflects, well, I have to say it again, in a universal fashion, in a every person fashion, despite the fact that it may not capture our specific differences. I don't know. Is that a compelling topic for Monday, March 28th, given the fact that everything else seems to be flying above us and blow us like a tornado?
We have an anonymous caller.
Okay. Well, let's hear from Anonymous. Good morning.
Hello. My son was verbally, emotionally years brainwashed by his father and was suicidal. We were houseless, and our situation looked very, very dire. I tried everything I could to keep my son from being killed, but when we read aloud her books, he had to stay alive to figure out what was going to happen next. So I'm grateful that she gave him a reason to forget for a little while the scary stories, and to act with curiosity, but also the general tone was kind of a resilience and a gentleness, you know, that, this is kind of the crazy stuff that you think as little kids or whatever, but there was this kind of buoyant, and it wasn't syrupy, because he would learn to be cynical, but there was a caring for people. There was no evil, you know, really evil bad guys or very white suburban privilege. But for my son, he is alive, and I am grateful.
Thank you.
So, if I heard you right, there was a little background noise. One of the things that helped your son was the fact that he could read a book about a world without all this strife and without having to deal with bad guys and evil people. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, actually, I was the one who was reading the book so that he would. Because he wouldn't, otherwise he'd just read the book and think to himself. I just kind of drag it out. but yeah, that was the time in which we could struggle and be curious, and I could drag out the questioning. And there was this inherent sense that his kind of fears and anxieties were unacceptable. And it wasn't catastrophic. It wasn't, you know, the parent was a, another parent was a horrible, evil bad guy. It was just kind of love, and you can get through it. And the kind of warmth and the friendliness, the opposite of the that goes under current. So whatever the book, I just read one after the other, dragging them out, trying to have conversation, trying to engage. That's been a long time ago, and he's alive. So I'm just grateful to him for that.
Well, thank you for sharing that story, especially given, you know, the fact that one of the reasons we're talking about it is because we need to have a respite from all the trials and tribulations of life. And your story exemplifies why we don't need a steady diet of doom.
Well, it was also that it wasn't fantasy land, you know, silly. It was dealing with, you know, family conflicts and sibling rivalry and, you know, a dying cat or things that were human experiences, but they were put into a light that we can, that you're okay to have feelings and they're not overcome you, and we can get through this. And there was warmth and friendliness in it.
Indeed. Mm. Indeed. Thank you so much. Relating to your observation, Cynthia Ritchie, who's the past president of the Association for Library Services to Children, said that since Beverly Cleary was a pioneer in writing chapter books with humor and situations that real children could relate to. She says her language and writing style is simple but not simplistic, and very accessible and emotionally charged, and her humor is unparalleled. So I think people could identify, children could identify with her character, and like Ramona, who was, you know, quite a character, who struggled with things that children experienced with her. Her father was struggled with unemployment and struggle about sleeping alone in her new room, and contrasting her with her seemingly perfect friend Susan. So these were characters and experiences that children could relate to, in a way that I read one article said that before Beverly Cleary, some of the books that were geared towards children were more moralistic and authoritarian in terms of how children should act, and people might be familiar with Dick and Jane books, and just a contrast between those characters and the characters that Ms. Cleary portrayed. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO-FM. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We began our show this morning by talking about Beverly Cleary and her writing, her passing, and whether or not you had memories of her, and why were you or not attracted to her. Celeste mentioned that you don't recall reading her as a child, and I would invite you to try to imagine the 10-year-old Celeste and go to your local library and pick up some books and become familiar with Ramona and Beezus and Henry Huggins and all those characters.
Well, now, I read books that I think a lot of people read, and, you know, some of them were the kind that are so popular now. You know, having said you read it sounds almost kind of trite, Like, who hadn't read A Wrinkle in Time? And I remember when it first came out, because, you know, I read the trilogy, and I read other books by Madeline, such as Arm of the Starfish, you know, and then I started reading some of her more adult books. I think one of them is The Stone for a Pillow or something along those lines, and some of her other stories. And so, you know, I was a voracious reader, like I said. Andre Norton and science fiction was another thing I read as a kid. But for some reason, you know, that one escaped me, yet I hear how it made such an impact on people's lives. And, I would ask people, well, what do you think made it so enduring, at least from your perspective, given the fact that, again, this is not a book known for having diverse characters, or rather an author. But you look at the same time as an author like Dr. Seuss, who portrayed people from all around the world, yet there are some books that the Dr. Seuss estate has deemed are not as helpful as they could be.
Right.
Give us a call.
Some of the books, and I can't recall them right now, that the estate said, no, we don't think we'll keep them in circulation. And so they said, the estate said that they are inappropriate. At the same time, you know, just I think it reveals that the author of Dr. Seuss was very much, as we all are, a person of his time. And while he could write great stories about, even be far above or before his time, where he talks about ecology and ecological damage that we cause, some of the books could be characterized as racist in some of the characterization of the people. But what are some of the books, or are there books that you read as a child that made an impact on your life? And Celeste, you mentioned, you know, you're a sci-fi fan, and you mentioned, you know, A Wrinkle in Time. And that was another book that somehow, I don't know why, you know, when I went to the library on 165th Street, somehow, I don't know what caused me to be attracted to that book, but maybe it was the title, maybe it was the cover art. But I remember picking out that book, and of course, I had no idea who the author was or what the book was about. But picking up that book and saying and starting to read it, and again, that had an impact on me. You also mentioned some of the popular books that, you know, children read, that I guess people of a certain age might be familiar with.
I love the way you said that. Yeah, people of a certain age, or people of a certain age might be familiar with it when it first debuted, because I'm sure people of a younger than that certain age know about the books now. I mean, they've even repackaged Lingle's books to make, I think, 3 or 4 different movies of A Wrinkle in Time. Each with varying success. I don't think any of them quite captured it. And none of them seem to have tackled the fact that that was a trilogy. Actually, there were 4 books, if you count the twin boys' adventure into the past, where they go back and I think they meet Noah. I think that's who they met. But anyway, books about impact, about universality, about how even when they're universal sometimes, they still kind of miss the mark, because maybe the people are a product of their time and not quite as what is the phrase I want? I don't want to say not quite as expansive as we think, you know. Maybe we're all a product of our time. But that's for us to discuss, and you can do that with us by calling 503 231-8187 and just have a moment for a flight of fancy and fantasy here on More Talk Radio. So, while we wait for our next caller, what was a book you read that you think nobody's even heard of right now?
Now, that's a challenging question. I would have to think about it for a while because it was many years ago when I was a child and trying to think of books that might not have had an influence. But in our conversation before we came on the air, we mentioned how we were, both you and I were attracted to a series of books. And I think they were by the same author, but with different names they used to characterize the author. And I used to read the Hardy Boys book, and you mentioned that you read Nancy Drew.
Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, because if it was a book, it was mine. You know, and I thought those were interesting books because even reading them as a child and appreciating the fact that there was a girl who was a detective, and as I pointed out to Cecil, you know, she had her own car. She had a little sporty roadster, which might be one reason why I like sports cars nowadays. Who knows? I could appreciate her, even though I looked at her and said, well, I'm not rich and I'm not white, but at least there's a book about a girl doing things besides knitting and crocheting, you know, because I knew there had to be more to life than that. So I found that book really interesting and exciting. And of course, again, with new media comes new portrayals and formats. And so Nancy Drew's been TV show after TV show, probably cartoons even, you know, for all we know.
Maybe. Yeah, and the Hardy Boys have been characters in movies and, I believe, TV shows as well. And you were mentioning Beverly Cleary when we began, and there was a 2010 movie about Ramona that I did not see, but some people had mixed feelings about it. But you know, that's true about all movies, how true they are to the books and to the novels. And that remains a challenge. But in terms of books, you know, we began the show by expressing asking me about books that I read as a child, and your observation, you know, the characters in Ms. Cleary it was Northeast Portland and near Hollywood District, and the characters were mostly white, or I assume they were white. And were there characters or books that I read that were that spoke to my situation as a young black boy growing in New York City? And I don't know. I was well familiar whenever there was like a black people on TV, you know, and people, you know, call everyone and saying that, you know, turn on the Ed Sullivan Show because so and so is on. And I was well aware of characters in cartoons, like now this is going to sound kind of strange, but as a young boy, there was a TV show, was it Johnny Quest?
Oh, love Johnny Quest.
And I was sort of attracted to Johnny Quest because his friend, which I think he was South Asian, but we had black and white TV. Yeah, we had black and white TV, but I was attracted because he was a person of color.
Yep.
So, someone probably later had to explain to me he was South Asian and all of that, but, you know, there was a person of color there that I identified with. So I think even as young people, I think we all were influenced by those type of popular characters and how, whether or not they spoke to us. What about you, Celeste? Were you attracted, or were there any books about characters that you identified with that you read as a child?
Oh gosh, I have to tell on myself. I'm about to tell why I'm a nerd. Encyclopedia Brown. Now, have you ever heard of Encyclopedia Brown?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay, that was me. That was me. I collected all the books, read all of them, insisted that the school library ordered them all. And, you know, I'm sure people are listening to us and thinking, why in the world are they talking about children's books? I mean, we could talk about the Derek Chauvin case, but why? Your mind cannot live on doom scrolls alone. And it's these very flights of fancy that maybe, you know, right now you might not find attractive and want hard news, but it's the very flights of fancy that give you the power to dream and give you respite from the harsh realities of life. And so, you know, today I wanted to take a moment and encourage people to call in and tell us about, you know, your adventures with Beverly's book, or the fact that even though you might have been a person of a different cohort entirely, different, you know, entirely, what was it about her books that you find universal? And, I mean, I don't even want to go down this particular dark path. We could say, well, we found them universal because there weren't any images of anybody else that looked like us. You know, I mean, don't get us wrong. I was hungry for books about people that look like me. And that's why I bought a bunch of them for my nieces, nephews, my grandkids, my daughter, everybody, anybody whose kids wanted books, you know. But at the same time, we can't deny that this ability to capture the basic humanity that some of these authors that we've mentioned were able to do did not give us a rest from the harsh realities of the world. I mean, as our earlier caller, our first caller said, reading these books help a child make it through some really difficult, harsh realities that would be harder even for an adult to address. So, you know, take a break, take a load off, join in the conversation. Encyclopedia Brown, it's like this, Cat, A Diamond in the Window. What other books that meant something to me? Of course, Nancy Drew. I don't know why those particular books are coming up to mind right away, but those are some of the books I've read. You know,
right.
And, you know, yeah, people will say, well, you're given to fantasy and what have you, but that was the only thing I read. I mean, I like my science fiction. I like my books about scientists. I remember reading a lot about Madame Curie.
Yeah,
and Harriet Tubman, George Washington Carver. But I long for adventure. That was me. So
right. Well, you know, I'm talking about children of a certain age or a certain generation. I certainly was influenced as a child by the Black Arts Movement. So it wasn't just books, but it was the whole genre of you know what was happening in the mid to late 1960s and and poetry and artists and musicians, poets like Amari Baraka, you know,
yeah,
with Leroy Brown, Leroy, oh, I forgot his slave name, but also
Jones, Leroy Jones,
Leroy Jones, right? Mm-hmm. But also, you know, the what was going on in music and culture. Maybe that's where I found things that I related to in a way. So I just remember just like art and music surrounding me and being having my family sharing those type of things with us. Now the nerdy side of me also, and I don't know how my parents were able or capable of, but it was very important for them, for their children, to have an encyclopedia. And I guess they bought it on a layaway plan or somehow, the World Book Encyclopedia, and it was, I don't know, 12, 15, 20 volumes. And that opened up a whole new world. So my sisters and I, and the encyclopedia was kept in the bookcase on our porch, would go and pick up a volume. So like the letter B, we would open up and I would like read it from beginning to end. And every year we got the yearbook. So 1971, the yearbook of the World Book Encyclopedia. So that was a moment of excitement for us when the World Book yearbook came and we could open it up and see, read what happened that year and how they portrayed it. So that's the nerdy side of me that came out.
I'm laughing because we had the encyclopedia, we had that one and the Encyclopedia Britannica, and then we had this other thing called the Golden Library of Knowledge book set.
I remember those.
That fed my nerd life. And then my father had been a pilot in the Navy. Yes, a pilot in the Navy. Don't correct me, y'all. I got a picture of him if you don't believe me. And he had a lot of flight books. And he also had a lot of scientific texts. So we would read those, too. And we had to always ask him, could we read some of his books? Because he also read stuff like James Bond, you know, and those were not for kids. And some other writers, you know, Isaac Asimov and all those, Lester Del Rey. Yeah, there were a few black sci-fi artists back in the day, authors, I meant. But, yeah, I guess for people of a certain age. But, you know, I want to encourage folks to come and take a load off and talk about something a little lighter today. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And why we started out talking about Beverly Cleary and the universal appeal of her books, you know, we're trying to take a little load off today and address some lighter aspects of a culture and society, human society, because if we're hoping next week, I'm trying to get a young person who does a lot of hard-hitting YouTube videos to come and talk to us about some of the issues behind Asian and Asian American relationships so that we can start to dismantle what right now has become a contagion, and that's this these expressions of anti-Asian hate. And so next week will not be a lighthearted show by any means. As a matter of fact, it's kind of going to be digging down into some of the more difficult aspects of not only society, perhaps, but self, as we look at how we address our own bigotries and prejudices and forays into racism. So take a load off this week. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. Give us a call and talk a little bit about the contributions that maybe Beverly made to you, or what your favorite book as a child was. So I've talked about some of my other books. What other books have you had, Cecil, that you think marked you, as we try to encourage people to join in the conversation?
Well, we mentioned, you know, A Wrinkle in Time. Both of us read that, was insightful. And for me, I was attractive to books about history, and I like to read also about biographies and things like that. The nerdy, well, I'm not sure if it's nerdy side, but I remember trying to read the autobiography of Malcolm X as a child, and trying to get through that. I also remember Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man.
Yes.
And that,
how old were you when you read it?
I must have been, I don't know, when I first picked it up, maybe in junior high school.
And again,
it was something I probably did not understand it fully, but it was just something I thought I read, and, you know, returned back to that later, maybe in high school, where it was like required reading. Those were things. And then there was that, referring back to the Black Arts Movement, there was a periodical, and I don't know whether it is still published, but it was called The Black Scholar. It was like a journal that promoted Black studies within academia, that I remember reading. But lest anyone think it was all heady stuff, I'm sure that there were things of pure entertainment, and that was every week I used to go after I got my allowance around the corner to the grocery store and pick up a comic book. So,
oh my God, yeah, comics. I wished I still had some of them, because I'd be rich now. Yeah, I love my comic books, and I remember when I discovered Wonder Woman, you know, I was tickled. And again, you know, you have to laugh and wonder, okay, yeah, there is that universal story, but, you know, were we primed, I guess, to be okay with the fact that we didn't see ourselves? We had to be satisfied with limited images or limited roles in which we could play, because I was tickled that it was a woman, even though she didn't look anything like me. And by the time the X-Men came around, you know, I was grown. It's like, I had Aretha listen to, you know, I had other writers and other actors and actresses and singers and scientists to pay attention to, you know, so I wasn't as hurt. You know, but I also devoured the gritty stuff, because I remember I was 15 years old and I read Native Son, and I was a little traumatized by it, but I felt a sense of claustrophobia because I could not it was as if this long tunnel had opened in my mind, and at one end was lynching and horrendous life of being Black American in the United States and even in the world. And then there was the future. Here I was, years after that story had been written, and beginning to experience institutional racism, and like think, my God, this is claustrophobic. I'm trapped in this tunnel that doesn't seem like it's ever going to end. And it took me a long time to shake that feeling, you know. And I think that's one reason why being able to find universal appeal in a book, you know, that broad appeal, is so important to us, because we have to be able to escape some of these claustrophobic places that we have to live in.
Yeah.
You are listening to More Talk Radio. I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I jumped when you didn't say anything.
No, go ahead.
Okay, you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. Cecil and myself are waxing poetic, and yeah, I'm going to take license. And we're talking about something a little lighter, a little frothier, just kind of a respite, and to maybe stir up your mind on Monday so that coming into the week, you're not caught in that claustrophobic tunnel, but rather you can have a flight of fancy to lift you up a little higher above the clouds. It is 8:45. Coming up at 9 o'clock will be the Old Mo Variety Hour here on your community connection. And if you appreciate KBOO's programming, its ability to both entertain and extricate you, or to get you down into the trenches, support those programs, support the station, support the idea of community-based radio. And you can do that by going to kboo.fm, and you can click on donate or give and support us. And keep us strong and keep us here another 52 years. So, like Beverly, maybe we'll end up celebrating our 104th birthday. And you can even be in effect, maybe.
That would be amazing. Amazing. So Celeste, you mentioned, you know, some of the books you read and your interest in sci-fi, and also your interest in some of the characters. I was wondering, did you read when you were younger, like Octavia Butler? Where was she in your realm of reading, or was she a part of?
Yep, she was. And I remember I was tickled. And I'm trying to remember what my first book by Octavia was. And, I'm thinking it might have been Kindred. I'm not sure. But it was 1995 when she got her MacArthur Fellowship. And so by then, in 95, I was in my 40s. You know, there it is. You know, I was not a spring chicken anymore. So it wasn't like I discovered her and got to read her when I was younger. I mean, when I was younger, the only female sci-fi writer that comes to mind right now was Andre Norton. And I remember when I found out that Andre Norton was a woman, that was a pseudonym, just like I found out that, Lester Del Rey, I think it's Lester Del Rey, was a Black man.
Right.
You know, and so, and that's what they told us anyway, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I was just trying to think of some authors. You mentioned Richard Wright, and certainly Richard Wright was someone that I read as a kid, and not, you know, yeah, relatively young. You mentioned Native Son, and that was sort of like, wow. I also remember trying to read Zora Neale Hurston, The Eyes
of
Watching God. And that was, you know, for me, I think I was attracted to that because somehow I knew that was a black woman writing about black people. And again, like, had some magical power when I went into the library and just say, read me, and attracted me towards her. So that was another author I read. And also, Uncle Jimmy, James Baldwin, was always floating around.
Oh, yeah.
That was an author I read as a younger person.
So, you know, I want to throw this out there. You know, an hour's almost up, and I'm really curious. Are there no readers out there? Or do you find this just a tad frothy? Oh, you know what? It just hit me in my mind. It was Samuel R. Delaney, not Lester Del Rey.
Right.
Samuel R. Delaney. I knew there was a Del in there. That's what threw me off. Yeah. Samuel Delaney. Yes, there we go. We're back on track now. But anyway, are there no readers out there? No one who looks at the value and the legacy of somebody like Beverly Cleary's books and can get with the idea that not everything has to be deep and entrenched and analytical and what is the word I'm looking for? Well, let's just stick with deep and entrenched and analytical. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I drink a latte or if I'm having lemon meringue pie, I do like a little bit of froth, just a tad. That's the whole point behind whipped cream and cotton candy. It takes you away, you know. But, hey, Cecil and I, we'll continue to share our books, and we hope even if you don't call in, you're at least stimulated to think of something a little bit lighter and engaging and let your mind kind of float away.
Well, and I don't think it's necessarily an attempt to avoid reality. I think one thing that we all know about literature, it is a lens by which we begin to understand reality, to interpret reality. So whether it is as something which on the surface seems nonsensical, it often has a lot of depth towards it. So whether it is children books with a rhyme to it, nursery rhymes are often revealing about world views and things like that. So
yes,
it's important to know, and I hope that people perhaps maybe keep our fingers crossed. We are moving to a place where we are able to engage with people more in public as people are vaccinated and things begin to open up. That this time would have been one in which you have spent time, certainly probably more time than you wanted, in front of your computer or TV screen, watching the latest episode of TV reality show, but also it might have been a time in which you had reintroduced yourself to or or introduce yourself for the first time to writers, to books that open up your mind and gave you a new perspective on reality?
It is 8:53, and coming up, as I said, at 9 o'clock is the Old Mo Variety Hour and much more programming. But if you're so inclined, I do want to challenge folks. We got time for maybe one, two calls, if you wish. 503-231-8187. And I do want to drop a couple of quotes from Beverly to kind of speak to what Cecil was saying. One is that Beverly says, "I long for funny stories about the sort of children who lived in my neighborhood." She also said, "What interests me is what children go through while growing up, or that I don't think children themselves have changed that much. It's the world that has changed." And I think hearing that speaks tons to being able to strike that chord regardless of who you are, whether you are Tanner Reed Dew, whether you are, what's one of the other authors, Dr. Sue Theodore Geisel, whether you are Andre Norton or whomever, or Richard Wright, you know, you can write a story that people hear and they can see themselves, you know, and by seeing themselves both in terms of the good things they do and the bad things they do, it helps them get an idea of how their actions not only affect them, but how they affect the world, how they have a lasting legacy on the world, good or bad. And
right.
So, you know, ultimately, like, I guess what we're doing is we're not just celebrating the stories that were written or the people who wrote them, but the power that the written word has to change our mind and to reflect our mind.
And that is so important. One thing that I picked up from Beverly Cleary, and this was whenever my parents told me it was time to clean up my room, I remember Henry Huggins and what he used to say, what those are valuable property. So that's why he refused to clean up the mess he made. And somehow, after all these years, that phrase stay in my mind.
Got a way I'm going, and it's my way. I get my own stakes in my own game. I got my own name and it's my way. I got my own wrong, I got my own right, I got my own fight and it's my way. I got my own peace, I got my own wrath, I got my own path that only I can go. Your day will come, your day alone. Years you'll know, and a life you'll grow. You got a way to go, and it's all on your own.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Are you a KBOO member? Tell us why you support KBOO. Call our listener testimonial line and leave a message telling us why you support KBOO Community Radio. Testimonials will be used on air during